call to order. This regular meeting of the Unalaska City Council is called to order at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, July 28th. I'll ask Councilman Coleman to read the mission statement.
Provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you. City Clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Mr. Longo?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Chastain?
Here.
Mr. Tungo?
Here.
Mr. Tudikoff?
Here. We do have a quorum. Let's see everyone, all the council members here tonight. Please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
To the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Welcome everybody in chambers tonight, also those that are online. I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda, please.
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungo, second by Councilman Longo. Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved. May I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of the special meeting held July 10th, 2026, and regular meeting held July 14th, 2026, as presented?
I'll make a motion to adopt the minutes of July 10th, 2026, and July 14th, 2026.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Tungle. Objection, the minutes are approved. There are no objections, they are approved. Next on our agenda are the reports. First, we have the June-July financials. I'll turn this over to turned over to the acting city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I'm going to turn it over to our interim finance director, Jim Sharp, who's joined us remotely. So, Jim, please give us an overview of those financials.
Thank you, Margie, and good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. You have in your packet a set of financials that conclude the fiscal year through June of 2026. I do want to make sure that we all know that these are unaudited. We are beginning the audit preparation process, so many of these numbers will change. They should not change significantly, but there will be some adjustments to them. I'm going to just touch on a few items tonight within the financials. On the general fund side, you can see on the revenue that the sales tax, we almost made budget. We will be making some adjustments. There is a chance, depending on the level of cash receipts we receive this month for June, we may exceed budget, but it's probably going to be right at or just below the budgeted amount. You'll also see that the raw seafood tax for the year, we pretty much wiped out the budgeted amount, exceeding it by $1.2 million or 120% of budget. So that's definitely a positive sign. On the expenditure side, you can look at each of the departments. We all stayed under budget, so that's always a positive as well. If you scroll to, Escarlin, if you scroll to the next page to the bottom, I just wanted to touch on the sustainability fund. And the investments in the sustainability fund have performed very well. We moved that money from the general fund in the middle towards the end of December, so roughly 6.5 months worth of activity here. And as you can see at the bottom, it's increased in value by $3,647,000, or roughly 7%, a little bit more than that. So that is performing very well. On the proprietary fund side, I just want to touch on a couple. Touching on those that exceeded revenues, revenue projections for the year, water, wastewater, and solid waste. I mentioned those specifically. They were certainly received the benefit of the rate adjustments in the rate study that was concluded towards the middle of 2025 that applied to fiscal year 2026. You'll also notice that housing exceeded revenue for the year, and each of the proprietary funds came in under budget on the expenditure side. Once again, I do want to mention that we are beginning the preparation for our audit. We do expect that our auditors, BDO, will be on site the second full week in October, week of October 12th. And our goal is to have the financial statements issued by the end of December. You also have in your packet information about the various proprietary funds. You will notice that the appropriations worksheet that I put in there the previous months was excluded simply because I want to be further along in the audit prep process before providing that. I am next scheduled to present financials to council in September, and those will include July and August activities. And with that, I will turn it over to the mayor and council for any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the report. Any questions or comments on the financials? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the at all the fund, basically what's in Treasury, the fund balances here that you were providing for encumbered and unencumbered.
Yes.
So looking at that page, I'm just looking at the tobacco tax fund, and I noticed that there's a unencumbered and unrestricted amount of $34,000 in the negative. Can you explain that?
Sure. So when I prepare this report, it is as of a date. And in this case, that date is July 24th, which is after the beginning of the new fiscal year. And when we make commit to make donations or contributions for the community support grants, we enter an encumbrance into our accounting system, and that is what you are seeing here. As the year goes on, the encumbrance will decrease and the revenue will increase, and that will wipe out the, eliminate the negative balance there.
Sorry. Okay, so in the encumbrance column, that includes the FY27, what we've allocated basically or appropriated to nonprofits, and that's why, that's what you're saying, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Any further questions on financials? None? Okay. Thanks, Jim. No questions from council members at this time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. From city manager, is there further information?
Not on the financials, sir, no.
Okay, thank you. Move on to the next item, which is the city manager's, acting city manager's report. I'll turn this over to Margie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to highlight a few items from the written report. We're planning a special council meeting at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, August 12th in the library community room to discuss the comprehensive plan. Our consultant, R&M, will present the community outreach results, discuss the themes that emerged, and most importantly, receive council's feedback and policy direction before the draft plan moves into its next phase of development. Given the long-term significance of the comprehensive plan, an uninterrupted discussion focused solely on the comprehensive plan will lead to a stronger final product that better reflects both the community's input and the council's vision for Unalaska. So I just wanted to provide a little bit more of an explanation why we felt the need for a special meeting for a work session to discuss the comprehensive plan, because it is such an important document. Next, items 2, 3, and 4 in my report are related to grant funding. We provide a bit more detail about the $3.8 million SWIFR grant that we received from the EPA and how we intend to spend it. The next one is our payment in lieu of taxes from the state for FY27. It's more than $1 million. We budgeted at $900,000, so we getting a little more than we budgeted for. Plus, we received an additional $9,300 for FY26. And then finally, we got an unexpected small grant from the state in the amount of $125,000 for port repairs and upgrades. So that was unexpected good news. Moving on, construction of the elementary school is proceeding on schedule, and the clerk has a few additional pictures on the screen for you. You'll see that the custom dinosaur head has been placed in the playground structure, and we anticipate completion of the playground by August 10th, which is in plenty of time for the start of the school year. So the soccer field has been completed, and they're now working on the play structures. And there are additional items in the written report, and we're available if, that one's, you can take that down. There are additional items in the written report, and we're available for any questions you might have.
Well, thank you, Marjorie. Councilman Tungle?
Yeah, why are we doing special session at the library?
Well, we just thought it would be good to get you out of your normal environment here, because it is a discussion, and really, really just want a discussion. And the last time we had a special session at the library, it just seemed that the mood and tone of the council's discussion was enhanced by that. So we thought we'd do it again. It's not really a meeting where you're going to be receiving the consultant will definitely be there, and they'll be joining remotely and walk you through the work on the comprehensive plan so far. But we just wanted to have a little more casual environment to encourage council discussion and feedback.
It is going to be recorded?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
If you really have a huge objection to having it at the library community room, we can move it back here if you'd like.
No, I'm just wondering. I thought they're going to do some kind of maintenance or something around here. That's
what. Oh, no, not for any reasons like that.
Okay. Thank you, Councilman Tungle. Any further questions for Acting City Manager? Hearing none, thank you for your report.
You're welcome, sir.
Move on to the next item is community input and announcement. This is time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. Everyone gets 3 minutes. Thank you.
Hi, Emlyn Crane. I'm speaking on behalf of APIA right now. I wanted to let you know they're still doing their community for community meetings to talk about substance abuse and behavioral health issues. I think they're calling it something else now, but I can't think of the name right this minute. But the next one's going to be tomorrow night at the library from 6 to 7 p.m. They are also doing a week-long program called Native It's Your Game for ages 12 to 16. August 10th through the 14th, that whole week, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the library. And it's all about exploring practical resources and tools that can help students stay focused, overcome challenges, and achieve your goals. Kids will learn more about healthy relationships, healthy life skills, sexual health education, much more. And USAVE is partnering with them on that. We're sort of peripherally involved. We'll be helping out with snacks and prizes and just providing information to the kids, but it's APIA's project, so I don't want to be taking credit for it. On behalf of the Museum of the Aleutians, Dr. Hatfield is not able to be here today, but they have trivia this week on Thursday the 30th at 6:30 p.m. at the RAT, and that's always really fun. And then for USAVE, our biggest upcoming event is going to be the Make a Difference Dinner for Suicide Prevention Awareness, which is normally in September. We might need to push it to the first weekend of October this year. We're trying to work out the details right now, but we'll be soliciting all our community partners to help us with that. That's always a really great event. Excellent food, excellent activities. Everybody that comes has a great time. I really hope those of you that haven't been there before will make an effort to come this year. That would mean a lot to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jolene Longo, PCR. I just wanted to let everyone know PCR 360 registration takes place this Saturday at 8 a.m. In-person registration will have priority. so make sure you're in person. HOA is August 15th. All the vendor tables have been purchased, so lots of food this year.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Greg Peters with the Alaska State Firefighters Association, local chapter. Just letting everybody know we have the Kilt Classic Tundra Golf event this Saturday starting at 9 a.m. So hope to see some of you guys there.
All right, thank you. Any further comments or updates from anybody in the chambers? Hearing none, is anybody on phone or team?
Mr. Kelty wanted to make a comment earlier.
I'm online now.
Okay.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Just want to give a touch on a few fisheries items. On Saturday, August 1st, the Golden King Crab fishery will open again in the Eastern District and the Western District. The harvest amount is 4.5 million pounds, so that gets underway on August 1st. They usually have 4 to 5 boats participate in that. Pollock fishing is still very slow. We're at about 233,000 metric tons harvested. That's about 500 million pounds. We're only at 31%, so we're kind of way behind. Usually at this time of year, we're close to 45%, 50%. Talked to NOAA today. They don't understand why it's so slow on pollock, but it's slow for all the sectors. We'll see what happens. My theory is that with so much ice, the water was chilled way down, and maybe the fish haven't schooled up yet, but that's my theory. We still have about 500,000 metric tons to harvest. That's about 1.1 billion pounds. And like I said, we've harvested 233,000, 513 million, 31% of the quota. Pacific cod, we still have 10 million pounds available in the pot boat 60 foot under category, but no one is fishing right now. They're busy doing other things, and cod fishing is usually slow in the summertime anyway. On the federal water, cod fish, they're only doing about 1,000 metric tons a week, a couple of million pounds. It's very slow, which is normal for this time of year. Halibut and sable fish are moving along. We're at about close to 6 million pounds on halibut statewide, and we still have about 7 million to harvest. We're at 45% of the quota. Sable fish, they've harvested 24 million pounds. 41% of the quota is left, and there's still 35 million pounds to harvest. And the Dutch Harbor food and bait fishery is right at 2,000 metric tons harvested, and there's still some deliveries going to happen. So that's all I have. Thank you very much. And it was nice to be back home last week and see many of you last week while I was in town. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate the update on our fishing industry. Any further comments or written comments or anyone on the phone?
No, sir. No one else made an indication.
Okay, thank you. Next is public comment on agenda items. This is time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. They don't want to wait until the item comes up for a regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to
home run
up with the city clerk.
First please pitch, home run. I knew it.
Oh, my.
Frank, turn your phone off.
The clerk's muting him now.
Hey. Anyways, back to comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium and use the microphone. State your name. Got it off, Frank? Okay. Does anyone present wish to speak? Clerk, City Clerk, do you have any written comments submitted or anyone on Teams, on the phone, or wish to speak?
No, sir. No one made a comment.
Okay, thank you. Next item is our item 10, public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any item set for public hearing. You have 3 minutes per person. Please come to the podium and state your name. The public hearing is now open for Ordinance 2026-13, amending Unalaska Code of Ordinance 3.40.040, pay range metrics to add to the police service specialist position. Does anyone present wish to speak? City Clerk, do you have any written comments submitted or anyone on Teams or on the phone?
No, sir. No one submitted a comment for this.
Hearing no comments from the public, the public hearing for Ordinance 2026-13 is now closed. Public hearing is now open for Ordinance 2026-14, creating a budget amendment number 1 to the financial year 2027 operating and capital budget for additional costs related to the purchase of a new servers and reclassification of a police officer position to the police service specialist position. The amendment will appropriate $149,851 from the general fund, increased the information service budget by $185,600, and reduced the police budget by $99,793, increased the communication budget by $32,022, increased the correction budget by $32,022, increased budget use of unrestricted net assets, and increased non-personnel operating expenses in the electric utility by $29,000, increased the budget use of unrestricted net assets, and increased non-personnel operating expenses in the water utility fund of $23,200, increased budgeted use of unrestricted net assets and increased non-personnel operating expenses in the wastewater utility fund by $20,300. Increased budget use of unrestricted net assets and increased non-personnel operating expenses in solid waste utility fund by $8,700. And increased budgeted use of unrestricted net assets and increased non-personnel operating expenses in the Ports and Harbor Fund by $23,200. Does anyone present wish to speak? City Clerk, were there written comments submitted, or does anyone on Teams or phone wish to speak?
There were no comments submitted, Mayor, and no one in Teams wanted to speak.
Okay, thank you. The public hearing for Ordinance 2026-14 is now closed. Next item, the public hearing is now open for Ordinance 2026-15, creating a budget amendment number 1 to the fiscal year 2027 budget.
Mr. Mayor, it's budget amendment number 2 this time.
Amendment number 2?
Yes, sir.
What did I say? Okay, creating a budget amendment number 2 to fiscal year 2027 budget to appropriate $5,161 for the general fund appropriated fund balance and increase fire EMS personnel costs in the amount of $5,161. Appropriate $107,223 of budgeted use of unrestricted net assets in Ports and Harbor Fund. Increase harbor office personnel costs in the amount of $17,730. Increase Unalaska Marine Center personnel costs in the amount of $46,636. increase spit and light cargo personnel costs in the amount of $13,818. Increase Carly Moses Small Boat Harbor personnel costs in the amount of $18,675. Increase Bobby Storr Small Boat Harbor personnel costs in the amount of $10,364. Covering increased wages, scales for the IAFA and IBU collective bargaining unit agreements. Does anyone present wish to speak? City Clerk, were written comments submitted, or does anyone on Teams or phone wish to speak?
No, sir. There were no comments submitted, and no one in Teams made an indication.
Thank you. The public hearing on Ordinance 2026-15 is now closed. Next up is a work session. We have a motion and a second to go on a work session.
I make a motion to go into a work session.
Second.
Motion by Councilman Tungle, seconded by Councilman Longo. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, we are in a work session at 26 p.m. First item in our work session is item A, comprehensive plan updates. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to invite our planning director, Cameron Dean, to the podium, and he's going to walk you through an update on the work on the comprehensive plan thus far. Go ahead, Cameron.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor, Council, and thank you, Margie, for teeing this up a bit in your manager's report. We've been working on the comprehensive plan for about a year now, and with your work session next month, we wanted to take just a couple minutes to update you on it, explain where we are with the project now. So next slide, and you keep going. Can you go one more, please? Okay, thanks. Okay, so a comprehensive plan. Essentially, it's a guiding document for the community as a whole. It's setting out our vision, our goals, as well as how we're going to achieve that. It's required by state statute. It's required that we update it periodically. Our current one was adopted in 2011. And while this doesn't expire like some kinds of plans do, it does become less relevant over time as the community changes, we achieve certain goals, something stopped making sense on it. So usually about 10 to 20 years is the time to start updating one of these. So that's why we're doing it now. And next slide, please. Okay. So end of the day is a decision-making tool. It helps us, it guides our actions, policy changes, so things in our city code, as well as capital investments, so things that you would see on the CMMP. And next slide, please. So it's a comprehensive plan. So it's comprehensive. It covers a lot of different areas in the community, so housing, energy, transportation, land use, public safety. But there's two particular areas with this plan update that we're focusing on. The first is transit, and that's specifically in response to Council's directive following our 2018 transit study that we did internally to have an outside firm look at this a little more deeply. So that's going to be a major part of the plan. It's when we were doing the study internally, we're looking specifically at a fixed route bus system, which is probably what a lot of us are familiar with from larger cities, buses stopping at particular points and has a defined route. In rural communities, there's a huge variety, though, in systems for bus transit, like dial-a-ride type systems, like demand response or deviated fixed route. There's a micro transit. There's a bunch used. So the study is looking at a lot of the systems used in similar communities around Alaska and other rural communities in the lower 48. They've all got pros and cons, so it's looking at how well they would fit here and then the capital and operating costs associated with those. Secondary focus with this plan is an economic analysis, and that's looking at some of the broader industry forces going on and how they affect the community. So fisheries, shipping, also looking at like smaller industries like tourism, and seeing how changes or trends in those industries should affect our long-term planning for the community. All of those things have a lot of different infrastructure investments that would be associated with them. So we're trying to look ahead with some of those market forces. And next slide, please. There's a bunch of actions that the city does day to day that all depend on the comprehensive plan. Any sort of permit that's coming through the planning department, the first standard that we have to look at when evaluating that is, does this further the goals of the comprehensive plan? So that has a big impact on what people are doing with their property. So that's conditional use permits, land use changes, zoning, as well as capital improvements. Like I mentioned, this will guide projects that you're seeing on the CMMP every year, similar to how when we adopted the PCR master plan, you started seeing those projects being proposed on the CMMP. And next slide, please. Okay, so this is where we're here. This is where we are now. We spent the last year doing public engagement, establishing those values, challenges for the community, our vision is, and our goals. And that was summarized in a PDF that Margie sent out to you all a couple weeks ago. We have a lot more plan materials that we can send you if you're interested in reading them. But over the last year, we've had, done a survey. We've done, a big push for public engagement, a bunch of public workshops that'll happen in February that you might remember. And then we have an advisory committee that's about a dozen community members that are meeting regularly to dig in a little more deeply to the plan. So, now we're coming into the tail end of that, establishing goals, to bring us to the land use plan development. And this is getting a little bit more specific. So looking at how we want particular parts of the community to grow, develop, and change over the planning period. So just as an example, we say all the time we would like to see more housing here, right? But now we're looking at, okay, so where do we want to see more housing, or what kind of housing do we want to see? Do we want single family, multifamily? You know, what do we want that growth to look like? And those are the kinds of questions we're going to be asking you at the work session next month. So those will directly feed into the next stage of plan development, which is the recommendations and implementation strategies. That's both policy changes and recommendations for infrastructure development, capital improvement, things you'll see on the CMMP. So example for housing, one thing that we've heard pretty frequently is a desire for more housing that's appropriate for a single person, you know, like a studio, one bedroom. We don't have a lot of them here right now. So if that is a goal we want to pursue as a community, next step would be looking at, you know, what are the policies we can do to make that more feasible? Like, is our zoning code right now making it feasible for developers to build that kind of housing? Or are there changes that we should be making that this plan would suggest? Once all that's done, we'll have a public review draft that'll go, you'll have an opportunity to review it, the community as a whole will have an opportunity to provide comments, and then we'll take all of those comments and bring them back into a final draft that'll go to adoption before the Planning Commission and City Council, shooting for spring of 2027. So I'm happy to answer any questions you have, but otherwise, we have the work session on the 12th to actually start digging into this stuff. So, thank you.
Well, thank you, Cameron. Any questions? Councilman Luby?
I'm just curious if you've had a lot of public input with the survey and some of the meetings that you have had. Has there been quite a bit of public input or very little?
Yeah, I would say generally, I'm happy with it. I think some events work better than others. I think the best input we had was from some of the targeted focus groups we had in February that were looking at specific topics in town. So, like, we had an industry-focused one or a housing-focused one or community services. And that got a lot of engagement from people who are actually working in those areas. And that was really helpful. I'm pleased with it so far.
Great, thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Any questions or comments for one? Okay, thank you. The update. Okay, next, does anyone present wish to speak? 3 minutes per person. City Clerk, anyone on phone or Teams wish to speak?
No one, sir. No one made an indication.
Thank you. Next item B, continued discussion regarding proposed sales tax increase and property tax mill rate decrease. Turn this over to Margie, Acting City Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On March 10th, Councilmember Luby presented her proposal to increase the city's sales tax and correspondingly reduce the property tax mill rate. In the proposal, a full staff evaluation was requested, which we've endeavored to provide with the staff memo in your packet. And I'd like to thank our Finance Director, Jim Sharp, and our City Clerk, S. Carlin McDeong, and our Planning Director, Cameron Dean, for assisting in that effort. The staff memo provides a summary, sets out on page 2 several policy considerations to aid Council's discussion, includes an overview of the proposal, sets out the staff findings, and provides responses to questions raised by Council. That's starting at page 3 of the memo, as well as additional information that I thought was pertinent to your discussion, and that starts on page 7. The primary staff findings, starting on page 1, were increasing the sales tax would shift a greater share of the local tax burden to residents, renters, businesses, seasonal workers, vendors, visitors. Decreasing the property tax mill rate would benefit owners of taxable real and personal property. Renters, homeowners, and businesses would experience increased costs through higher sales tax on rent, fuel, goods, services. There's little evidence that reductions in property taxes would result in lower rental rates. Creating dedicated sales tax funds would reduce future budget flexibility while not necessarily reducing general fund expenditures by an equivalent amount, as annual appropriations for school, clinic, community support grants would continue to be determined by the City Council. The proposed dedicated funding levels do not closely align with historical appropriations and could result in either funding shortfalls requiring continued general fund support or the accumulation of significant surplus balances in dedicated funds. And lastly, the existing budget surpluses do not by themselves demonstrate that the city is overtaxing its taxpayers. Annual operating results are influenced by conservative budgeting practices, one-time revenues, investment earnings, grant funding, deferred expenditures, and prudent financial management. So the analysis of that point starts at page 3 on the staff memo, and the related tables prepared by the finance director are on page 69 of the packet. So I'll ask the clerk to go to page 3 of the memo, where it talks about the existing budget. Yeah, this section right here, that profit and loss. So that was a big thing that I wanted to point out, because actually, if you go to the table, the attached table. So if you don't remove certain elements from the totals, it does look like we have, you know, enormous budget surpluses some years. But you need to remove from that things that aren't things that are highly variable and you can't count on. Things like one-time revenues, like if we sold property, investment earnings, grant funding, deferred expenditures, that sort of thing. So if you remove those things, the budgeted surpluses the surpluses are actually much less. More in the the last 10 years, it's only $1.2 million as opposed to $5.8 million. Anyway, back to my introduction. We also requested a review of the proposal by the city attorney, and Mr. Cassiola's memo is included in your packet. He concluded that while the city has the legal authority to increase sales tax and create dedicated funds and reduce the property tax mill rate, dedicating tax revenues to specific purposes does raise important legal and policy considerations. The attorney's memo notes that dedicated funds do not increase overall funding for a program, rather they replace general fund dollars, and that's, we all know that, and that would otherwise be used for the same purpose. He also cautions that conditioning voter approval of a sales tax increase on permanent dedication of the resulting revenues creates legal uncertainty regarding whether future councils would be bound by those decisions, or excuse me, by those dedications. To avoid that uncertainty, the city attorney recommends separating ratification of any sales tax increase from the advisory questions regarding the intended use of those additional revenues. His memo further concludes that if the primary objective is to reduce the tax burden on local households while maintaining city revenues, that reducing the property tax mill rate is a relatively imprecise approach, because the greatest financial benefit, of course, would accrue to owners of high-value commercial and industrial properties rather than residential property owners. As an alternative, the city attorney recommends maintaining the existing mill rate and instead considering residential property tax exemptions that are authorized under Alaska law. Such an exemption would allow property tax relief to be targeted specifically toward residential property, provide more equitable benefits, and more directly accomplish the stated objective of reducing the tax burden on local households. Should the City Council wish to pursue a targeted property tax relief, the city attorney has identified alternative statutory mechanisms that could be evaluated by council. And Mr. Cassiola is attending the meeting remotely and is available for your questions during your discussion. So with that long summary, I'll turn it over to the council for discussion.
Okay, thank you, Marjorie. Sounds like we're not fully up to date on what this means, but we're starting to learn a little bit more about it at every meeting. It's a very interesting problem we got. Any comments from the council? Councilman Luby brought up this.
Yeah, so it is a lot. There's a lot to this, and it has a lot of different components to it. I'm kind of disappointed that we didn't see this until now, kind of at the last minute to get it on the ballot for October. So that makes it kind of tough. I think that council needs more time to digest everything that, you know, that staff came up with, and also can have time to consider other options versus just saying, okay, we're not going to do this because it doesn't work. Because there are some other options that we could possibly do. So
can I make a comment on that point?
Yes,
you and
please.
I talked about that earlier too. So we do feel a push in order to get, if council wishes to proceed with any ordinances that require voter ratification, our general election is October 3rd. And in order to get it on the ballot, we would, October 6th. The clerk corrected me. Thank you. We would need to get any ordinances adopted by the end of August. Although we were thinking about it and remembered that the state has a general election in November. So we could buy another month of time for council to consider this a little bit longer, which I think is a great idea because this is important stuff. And I think we all need a little more time to digest and analyze it. We could have we could ask council to set a special election on the same day as the state election. We would just need to have separate ballots and separate tabulating machines, which is not a problem. It'll cost an additional $3,500 or so to print the ballots and program the memory cards. But we could have a special election on November 3rd. November 3rd, is it, for the state election?
Sure.
We can do it at the same time as that. So that would buy us another month. I just wanted to point that out at the beginning.
I think that's a great idea, you know, just because it gives everybody a little bit extra time to consider it. And, you know, and this might not move forward, you know, but it gives people more time to talk with other community members and, you know, see how they feel and with different options that are available out there. One of the things that was mentioned was about the mill rate only helping property owners, which is true, it does. But the intent wasn't just to help residents. They're also to help businesses alike. There's businesses that are also struggling and reducing the mill rate could help them to address the fact that renters wouldn't see a benefit by reducing the mill rate. We could remove sales tax from altogether from rental properties. I did a little bit of calculations just basically on the numbers that you guys provided. You stated that there was about 240 residential rental properties, and with the average rent of $2,279, if you remove the 3% sales tax that we currently have, that's an $820 a year savings to renters. And if it was a 4% sales tax, it's $1,093 a year. That's pretty comparable to a reduced property tax for homeowners. And so that's something to consider as well. Don't have to consider it tonight, but there, you know, there's always going to be possibly pros and cons to both of them. One of the other things that was talked about was concerns over dedicating funds. So part of the reason for wanting to dedicate funds was the community members. I hear it all the time. They believe there's a lot of waste in the city and they don't want to give more money just to spend on whatever. And just one of the things that is, I hear these different little things all the time, but one of them that, you know, somebody said to me one time was, why are the street lights on when it's daylight? That costs the city money. So it's little things. There's lots of little things that I hear all the time, but that's just one example. It's not necessarily that staff is doing anything wrong or anything. It's more, there are things that the city could do. So a lot of people don't want to increase taxes because they don't want to spend any more money on things at the city. But if they know where their money is going, they may be more likely to agree with an increase in sales tax. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to dedicate the taxes. I do understand that it is more of a burden for staff to have multiple dedicated funds. And so one way to kind of resolve that issue would be to maybe not have so many dedicated funds. Maybe you can roll them into one fund. We could even roll all the funds with the bed tax and the tobacco tax, even though it's a little more restrictive on the tobacco tax. We use both of those for community support grants. We could roll all of them into one fund and have the bed tax, the tobacco tax, and we could either have a 0.5% of the new increased sales tax if that passed go towards community grants, and the clinic just gets absorbed into that just like it is now instead of having its own separate fund. Another one is we could put them all together, and including a school, and have one fund that's considered a fund for schools and community support, which it broadens that flexibility that we would have with still letting community members know that the increase in tax would be going to something specific that most likely is pretty important. Most of these, you know, the school is super important to people. The community support programs are important to people. And our clinic is super important to people. So they know where their money is going. And I feel like, you know, and maybe I'm wrong. We wouldn't really know until it goes to a vote and becomes ratified. But I feel like a lot of the residents would be in more support of it if they knew where their money was going. With the renters, you know, taking sales tax off all the way would save them money, you know, even right now, because they do pay, you know, quite a bit of money in sales tax just in their rents right now. Excuse me. So The last thing I wanted to address was the dollar for dollar for the mill rate. So the other thing I was trying to address, the things I was trying to address with this is one, shift the sales tax to a broader base, not just to businesses and property owners. We all pay sales tax up to 3%, but the property owners are consistently seeing the assessed values increase on residential property, not so much on commercial property because there's not commercial property selling, but every year it goes up. And so we're saying it's okay for your mortgage to increase every year, every month. You know, every year your mortgage increases because of your escrow, because the assessed value goes up and you owe more property tax. So now we're saying it's okay that this small group or, you know, people that own property, it's okay for their monthly rent, even though it's a mortgage, to go up, because it does. My mortgage just went up for next year just because of this year's property taxes. So in September, I'm going to pay more every month for my mortgage, which is essentially my rent for housing. So I wanted to address making it more equal for everybody. To make it more equal for everybody, you need to spread that tax out. And sales tax is the way to do that versus property tax. The other part of it is I don't want to reduce the income that the city receives. It's just a way to, change the way we receive the money. The city needs the revenue that we have right now. We have a lot of projects to do, as Jim had stated, with all the buildings that need to be repaired. We can't really afford to lose revenue that we currently are getting, but we can trade it. So I appreciate everything that Charles had given us as well, with the different options of maybe just reducing or giving an exemption towards property taxes for residential homeowners. That helps them, but it doesn't really help everybody else. It also reduces income that is received by the city. It doesn't replace it. So that's another thing to consider. There was a few, I gave all the council members a paper here that kind of shows how I intended to replace the income for the city, but you have a 1% sales tax increase. That's approximately 4.7. We didn't quite make it this year. We were close to 4.6, but for FY26, but it's fairly stable. It's usually right around that number. And if you have $900,000 that is equivalent to one mill rate, you could potentially reduce the mill rate by 5.23 mills. That's a lot to earn that $4.7 million or still keep that $4.7 million. I don't think it would be a good idea to go that low, but we could do 6 mills, which is pretty close, instead of less than 6. And your revenue would still basically just be replaced. You might even get a little bit more in the general fund, bringing it to 6 with the replacement of 1% sales tax. So what I have for council is 4 questions that we need to kind of consider. One of them would be, should council have more discussion about the 1% sales tax increase, or should we just kill it now? Should council plan to exempt residential housing from all sales tax if voters ratify the 1% sales tax increase? The third question would be, should council plan to reduce the mill rate
if voters ratified a 1% sales tax increase. And then the fourth question would be, should council dedicate a 1% sales tax increase to schools and community support? Those would be the questions that I would want to hear back from council to see if they want to move forward with anything or if we should just drop it now. So I'm going to let other council members have input on and hear what they have to say about everything. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Luby. Councilman Longo?
Yeah, so my biggest concern with doing a 1% sales tax and voting it in is that in the future, council, even if the 1% passes and we do reduce the mill rate, future councils can go back and increase the mill rates without it being voted on. And so there's no way to go back from the 1% sales tax if the mill rates were to increase because the city needed more income. I did like the direction that the attorney was going with the changes in legislation for exempting property tax. And I had that same question, if the city could potentially exempt sales tax off of rent, and what would those numbers look like? What percentage does the city use for residential property tax and residential sales tax?
So your question is, what's the rate of tax for on residential rents for sales tax?
No, like what percentage of our budget comes from that?
That would take some research. Yeah, that would take some research.
Thank you, Councilman Long. Councilman Shostian?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Councilman Luby. This is it's actually really interesting. I would definitely like to hear more about this to help formulate a better decision or more thought out decision. I think moving this forward would be probably appropriate in some fashion, just so we can continue the discussion and the debate on what the right path forward is. A couple of things that stand out to me right now, with the mill rate, a lot of the city services are borne on the back of property owners, whether that's an industrial property owner or a single family dwelling, or say a duplex or a multifamily dwelling. A lot of the city services are borne on their back through the mill rate. One of the things that I appreciate about the sales tax is the sales tax takes what a local population of 4,000, you know, a fraction of that population owns property and stuff, and right now that's where a lot of the services are born. It takes that and expands it out to about 10,000 additional people, right? The people who come from the processing plants and the factory trawlers and the trawlers and those two tugboats that are outside our window right now. It spreads it out, and it spreads it out more evenly. You think about what a 1% additional tax would be on a $5 bottle of soda. It would be about 5 cents, right? And that would obviously go up the more you spend. So I appreciate the people that aren't from here and that aren't paying the property tax. I appreciate them bearing the burden for really what a lot of these services are designed for. You know, if we had a water treatment plant, a wastewater treatment plant, roads for a population of 4,000 people, it would look a lot different than it does right now. If we had a PCR for a population of 4,000 people, it would look a lot different than it does now, but we don't. We have city infrastructure that's based off about 15,000 people coming to our community at different times of the year with surges in July and right around June and then tapering off. We have a city staff that's based off of right about 15,000 people, a fire department, a police department, a ports department, where staffing is based off that number. Actually, probably more people because a lot of the staffing levels were set in the 90s and in the 80s and have been increased since then. So the idea that a 1% sales tax would be divided more evenly among people that really use the services, I think, is critical. I like the idea of a dedicated sales tax. I realize there's pros and cons, and it really limits council's ability to adjust that if there's changes in whatever is going on. But what it also does is it protects the nonprofits, and it protects the clinics, part of the clinic funding as well, if that's the dedicated fund we go with for the sales tax. It protects their funding to an extent, and it makes it so it's you can really kind of calculate it out and average it out, and it becomes more predictable for the nonprofits, which I appreciate. One of the things this council has struggled with for a long time is funding the nonprofits. We've set a cap. Oftentimes we exceed that cap, and we really want to work with the nonprofits to make sure they have the funding they need. Having a dedicated sales tax will ensure that funding is there and that future councils can't adulter it effectively. Removing the sales tax on rent, I mean, I think that we as a community for decades have identified that housing is a critical problem here. Meeting after meeting, year after year, decade after decade, we realize that housing is a critical problem here. And one of the ways to address housing is by making it more affordable. Removing the sales tax on rent very well could be one way to do that as well. I think it's also important that we bifurcate the two issues of increasing the sales tax or proposing an increase to the sales tax from reducing the mill rate. I think those are two very separate things that in this discussion I think is critical that we talk about. But in the documents that are generated from this meeting, I think we address specifically the sales tax, because I think the mill rate discussion really should be separate because they're two separate taxes, and council has a latitude to reduce. We could reduce the mill rate at the next council meeting or a couple council meetings, but effectively we could start that reduction at the next council meeting, and that can happen at any time. I think the issue right now is really what do we do with the that 1% sales tax. That's kind of where I'm at. So ultimately, I would like to see this move forward, primarily for discussion and to see what kind of community feedback we get after this meeting. What my position is in the end, I don't know. That's where I'm at.
Thank you, Councilman Chastain. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I want to first of all thank Councilman Luby for bringing forward this proposal and these ideas. So it has started a discussion about, you know, how we generate income and revenues to the city. So that's always a positive. There's a whole bunch of items here, and I'll just hit on a few of them so we can keep going with this discussion. But my focus on this, and I would hope the rest of the council's focus, and from what I understand is that the whole idea behind this is to address how do we make living in Onalaska a little more affordable for residents, and that being the focus of this whole exercise. A couple councilors have touched on the fact that if we do increase the sales tax rate, that future councils could come in behind and raise the mill rate, and which would negate what we're trying to accomplish here. I could see us moving forward with this and having more discussion, but address items like, making an exemption on property taxes for the residents, and exploring other ideas that would ultimately meet that goal of addressing affordability in Alaska. As a side note here, as far as a time frame, I think this does need more discussion, and I wouldn't support doing any kind of implementation on anything that was accepted or approved until probably July of 2027 at the earliest, which would give us more time for discussion. If we had to, we could do a special election in that time period. But it would give everyone an opportunity, especially with the new city manager coming in later this year, to have a more robust conversation and potentially vet, other ideas that would do the same thing, addressing affordability So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Tundle.
Yeah, I do agree. I think we need more discussion on this. I don't want it to die down. All we want is what's best for the people that lives in this community. And as far as the nonprofit, we never turn anybody down. We always entertain and we always give whatever they ask for. And I know it's not easy for us to do all the numbers, meet all the numbers that we want. But every year, as much as we're hurting on some other projects and everything else, everything is being, when it comes to nonprofit, 100%, we've been giving them whatever they requested. And there are a lot of this nonprofit that is supposed to be a state funded, and the city is generous enough to do them. And thanks to the fishing industry most of the time. With the tax, 1% tax that we were talking about, I think a lot of industry will hurt a lot more. Cost of fuel, you know, that 1 cent when they buy millions of gallons, it adds up. I think a lot more discussion and dedicating the income for that 1%, it really limits what the council can do. And it's unfair to the other nonprofit that are not included in there. So, and on the mill rate, I agree. We can lower the mill rate anytime we want. So I think it'll be a separate discussion on the mill rate. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Lungo. When you talk about the residential housing ownership, the small minority of what is here, and most 70%, as it brought up. Councilman Coleman.
You go ahead.
I didn't see you waving.
Sorry. Okay. You want me to go? Or?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Later.
You get your last say. Okay, awesome. Well, first off, I kind of respectfully disagree with Mr. Tungle's assessment of the grants. We have limited their asking. Recently, not because of the implementation of the tax for the tobacco. So that's helped a lot, especially with the increased needs of the clinic. It's been a big boost to our ability to fund them to a greater level than what I think they have. But we have in the past had to say no. And that's always hard to say that to your community members. I guess I really kind of have some questions from Mr. Cassiola. He's on, right?
Mr. Cassiola is on the line. Okay, Would you make sure that Mr. Cassiola is unmuted? Okay. He is can unmute himself, and so you can ask away.
Okay, so I guess first is just more legal stuff on your section B here of your memo. You're talking about Alaska law is structured so that municipal governing bodies are not unduly restrained in ensuring the municipality's fiscal needs are met, and you have a footnote on that. And it talks about the Alaska State Constitution and some quotes. I guess I just give some clarification on it. That's talking about state tax and not to be dedicated for special purposes. So I don't understand how you correlate that to municipals being able to designate certain taxes for a specific purpose.
Sure. And yes, you're correct. The constitutional provision only applies to state tax, does not apply to municipal tax. I was giving it as an example of kind of the importance, from a legislative perspective of flexibility in the budgetary process. There are other sort of statutory examples. For example, ballot initiatives cannot call for appropriations, and there are similar limitations. You know, there's no one statute that sort of says, you know, councils and assemblies must retain maximum flexibility in budgeting. You know, it's a structural aspect that arises through, you know, numerous provisions of law. But correct, I just gave the constitutional example in the state just as an, you know, overall example of, you know, the legislative body having, you know, flexibility in budgeting. But it does not restrict municipal dedications of taxes.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I understood that correctly. And right, because we do have a designated of our 3%, 1% goes to capital projects. So we are already restricting use of how we spend our tax base. And then I'm really kind of interested in this Title 29. Was this newly passed with the $75,000 exemption?
So the $75,000 exemption, which is in 29-45-050A, is sort of quite old. Okay. It used to be $10,000. They changed it to $75,000 in the last 5 years. I don't remember exactly when, maybe 2022 or 2023. So the sort of basic exemption was there for quite a while, but the legislature recently, upped the maximum to $75,000 and wisely actually added that it continues to adjust based on the consumer price index. So, you know, they don't have to go back every 5 or 6 years and change the $75,000. The other residential exemptions discussed are brand new. It was House Bill 13, which was just passed and went into law, I think in June, maybe May, but I believe June of this year.
Okay, and that's the section that gives money, because currently right now what do we currently have? I'm going to ask the city. For exemptions, we do have up to $10,000 exemptions currently.
Yeah, clerk, go ahead, please. Right now we have for mandatory exemptions, we have the first $150,000 value for the senior citizens and disabled veterans. And then we have first responders, fire EMS folks currently have $10,000 off of their home. This new addition now includes hazmat personnel. And then our other optional property tax exemption, which we just recently included, was for the nonprofit exemption. But it has to be used exclusively for the purpose of that nonprofit.
Okay, so then
we also have sprinklers.
Yeah. Okay, so then I'm going to go back to then this section about the $75,000 if you are if you are a resident and you're residing in that home, is that part of the current?
Not for the one under paragraph A, no. The new ones specify owner occupied.
The new ones that you just said, it's House Bill 13 that
mm-hmm.
just passed.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something that I'm trying not to get off here because I think it's still
could play into this whole meal rate thing, okay? So just bear with me.
So the chart on the screen?
Yes, thank you.
The middle column, 29.45050, paragraph A, the amount of the exemption can be up to $75,000, would apply to all residential property, and voter approval is required.
Okay.
For the two new ones under paragraphs DD and EE, council can choose, it's an optional exemption, you can choose to exempt any amount from a partial to a full exemption of under DD, it's owned and occupied by a resident of the city, and EE is owned and occupied by a first-time home buyer, and voter ratification is not required.
Okay. So I think that's really pertinent here for this discussion here, because we could, as a council, as a body, could look at if you're trying to reduce, I mean, we now have a new option here that's available to us, and to help alleviate, instead of, you know, focusing on mill rate, this would help. This is a significant amount, $75,000 off your, then the assessed value, correct?
And at 10.5 mils, that equals $787.50 per parcel.
And that's, yeah, that's no jump change. That's a lot. So I thank you for the clarification on that. That was really good. It's good information to have. And I think that could really play into if it's, you know, focusing on how, I mean, but then that's, you know, less money for tax base revenue for the city too. So you have to think. So then if you're wanting to lessen the burden for the homeowner here, this is a really good way to do it. But then you know, you have to look at what you're going to lose on your taxes, and you may want to think about, well, you know, supplement that with a dedicated sales tax. So, yeah, there's a lot to play in when you have these kind of discussions, which is,
if you are interested in those numbers, clerk, if you could advance two slides. If we kept the mill rate at 10.5, we have approximately 340 residential parcels. The value of the $75,000 exemption on 340 parcels is $25.5 million. That's a reduction in assessed value. And then reduced tax parcel, tax per parcel, like I said a minute ago, would be $787.50. So that would be less tax to the owner. And exempting the first $75,000 in value, just in summary, would remove 25.5 from the, a million from the tax roll, and would equal $267,750 in revenue. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, thank you. I don't really have, I don't, you know, this is, like I said, this is a work session. And after reading this, you know, getting this the other day, and it's a lot to consume. And again, you know, it's taxes. And so you want to make sure you have your ducks in a row if you're going to go and throw it out to the public, because you want to, if you're going to present it to the public and say, yeah, you vote on it, I think you need to be vetted and, you know, and support it and have the documentation and the evidence to support it, instead of just saying, yeah, just throw it in the wind, see if something sticks. So, anyway, I appreciate the, thought, and everybody's commitment to this. And like I said, I really didn't feel like it just needs more work. And I didn't want to push. I think this upcoming fall election is just is way too soon for it. And I'm not opposed to having more discussion on this. I just don't feel like the fall is a good time period to really vet this and have a bit more discussions. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Councilman Coleman. Sorry for bypassing you there. But you got your word in. Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I just had one more question about Title 29 there. So the DD and the EE, it says any amount partial
to a full exemption. So we're not limited to $75,000 on that one. Like, you could.
That's correct.
You could do the, like, not charge. Or
you could exempt it altogether.
Altogether.
So the previous slide, which I think is in your printouts as well, DD and EE, a municipality may by ordinance exempt or partially exempt from taxation real property owned and occupied as the permanent place of abode by a resident in the municipality. So you could take the property tax for residential parcels completely out for owner-occupied
okay.
properties. And we, you know, we tried to do an estimate, and the city clerk put this together for me today. She threw her other work aside. And by our best guesstimate, we have 154 owner-occupied parcels.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if you saw this in the memo, but our census data for Unalaska indicates that we have a relatively low home ownership rate. 75% of our residents, in the census at least, indicated that they rent, not own. It's like 69 something, but I rounded it up to 70. So that's a pretty low home ownership rate, actually.
Okay. So then I guess the last thing is, from what I've heard from everybody in council, I basically heard two people say that they wouldn't be ready to move forward with this in this fall, that possibly with more discussion later on next year. I'm concerned about not before we, if we, I'm concerned about the budget process, and if we wanted to lower the mill rate, it would have to be completed before it's time to address that, if that was going to be part of it. So, and I believe that's by April we have to. Is that correct, Margie? The mill rate, when does the mill rate have to be decided? At no later than for FY20?
I don't remember the code language, but we usually do it in April or May.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And so that would be something to consider.
I think the clerk just told me that she thinks the actual deadline is June 30th.
Oh, to set the mill rate is June 30th. I thought taxes had to be out by then. But anyway,
I'll have to look.
Regardless, there's a deadline there to set the mill rate. And so that's something to consider about when. I guess I'm hearing that we're probably don't have enough support to move this forward for this year. But it sounds like everybody would like to continue the discussion. So I would love it if we could continue the discussion and not just put it aside until the last minute of next year. So anyway.
Clerk just looked it up, and the date is June 15 for the mill rate.
Thanks, Councilman Luby. Councilman Chastain, let's wrap this thing up.
Yeah, absolutely. Councilman Coleman, thank you for asking those questions. That's really insightful, and I think that's something we, working through the mill rate and the exemption for owner-occupied residents, I think it's something I'd be really interested in. I would be more than willing to second a motion or direct the city manager to bring back the property tax at a specific time next year if somebody, Councilman Luby, made that motion. So there's a dedicated directive to the manager with a date set to bring it back for discussion.
My turn now. Well, I'm concerned. I like what was brought forward, and I understand why it's brought forward. And everybody, when you mention taxes, everybody's hair stands up, and they get angry before they have an opportunity to express what we're trying to do. And when you talk an increase in a 1%, we need to understand what that means. And I agree with everyone that we need to have more time, more dialogue, and better understanding what the revenues are going to look like. in about 3 to 5 years when this actually we see any effects, in my opinion. Might put it into ordinance next year. It won't take for another year and a half. The other thing is I don't know, I'm trying to understand the low-income rental units. The owners have a government grant, you know, to build that facilities that they have. How is that going to affect their low-income people? Because they will not, in my opinion, qualify for any kind of reductions because of being funded by the federal government, similar to veterans who go out and buy a new home.
Are you speaking specifically of the low-income house apartment buildings that we have in town? I think there's two. They have a different property tax assessment process.
Yeah,
it's based on the income received at the property, not on the full value of the property. And that's all because of the federal laws under which those were constructed. So they have a separate sales tax assessment, excuse me, property tax assessment process than any of the other properties in town. So they're not assessed on the full value of the real estate and the improvements like everybody else is.
Okay, thank you. I also agree mill rates and taxes are separate items, so we need to try and keep that within the council's authority and not give it away because, as Councilman Tungle mentioned, we could be losing some of our authority to regulate any kind of increases or decreases based on what we do, not knowingly understanding that we couldn't do back to it again without a full vote of the community. So I'm all in favor of more discussion until I'm sure that the intention is to reduce those living in the community. Industry has some say, I'm sure, as we start talking more and more about what they're doing, as Councilman Chastain mentioned. Tens of thousands of people that are here are not really affected. They get the benefit of having housing and provided by them, and they're not paying rent. They are working in the facilities. And so I want to know what that's going to affect to the council going to be in at some later date for this community. But I'm in agreement with the majority from what I'm hearing. So we need more information or dialogue with the people in the community about what the effects are going to be and possibly hold three or four public meetings where we discuss this issue. Important part of our process and what we're doing as council members. So, is there any further discussion? Is there? Then we could ask that when we do get to the end of the regular session, there be a motion directive to move, a directive to move forward with staff. Yeah. Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question to Margie. If I put a directive out there, to keep this moving forward with future work sessions. I would be interested in your input on what would work for staff. I believe we probably will need multiple work sessions. I don't know if once a month or, you know, what would your recommendation be, I guess, if you have a thought on that right now.
If more information is required, it would be good to know what specifically you're asking. Because I can go back and listen to the recording of this meeting and try to glean what questions there might be out there. But what you're looking for would be really helpful. And I guess moving back a step, is the goal to reduce taxes on our residential, on our residents, people who live here year-round, or is your goal to reduce taxes for businesses as well? Because in your prior discussions, Councilmember Luby, I think most of us gleaned from that you wanted to reduce the tax burden on residents. But tonight you kind of expanded that more to businesses. And so if I missed the boat on that, I apologize. But and then I think it was Councilmember Bell said the whole idea is to make living here more affordable for residents. So I guess I want to know the goal so I can help you get there. And I need to know specifically what information you feel like you don't have. Because I think we've, with taxes, and especially you're talking about two different types of cap taxes, there's some information overload. You know, you can have paralysis by analysis, as they say. So knowing specifically what you'd like to see or hear or discuss would be helpful. And that doesn't have to be given to me tonight. You know, you guys could email me and say, here's what I'm thinking, or, you know, or ask specific questions. I have no problem keeping this on the radar. You know, maybe once a month would be a good idea, or even in 2 weeks we could bring it back if I had some actual questions and receive some feedback from council about what your goals are and where you'd like to go with it. Do you all want to have the residential property tax exemptions? That's kind of an easy thing we could add. You know, do you want us to do a sales tax increase? And do you want to do the dedicated funds for that revenue? So it's just some real, you know, general higher level questions so we know which way you're headed. What you would like to see brought back to you would be helpful. It's always good to know what the question is before I try to answer it.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And so the maybe just, yeah, work sessions. I could put a directive later after we can kind of think about it, you know, for me, and then other council members could also put directives of what they would like to see. But I think keeping it on the radar is a good thing for sure. So thank you.
Any further discussion?
The city clerk said she thought Mr. Cassiola wanted to speak. Charles, did you have anything to say?
No, I don't.
Okay, sorry about that. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you, Charles. Thank you, Marjorie. We'll finish with our discussion, which was the continued discussion regarding proposed sale tax. Does anyone present wish to speak? Anyone on phone, Teams, or written comments?
No one on Teams, sir, and no written comments submitted either.
Okay, thank you. At this time, it sounds for that we'll have more further discussion on this item, item B. I'll request a motion and a second to return to regular session.
Make a motion to return to regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Lago, seconded by Councilman Chastain. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, we're back in the regular session at 7:32 p.m. We're now on regular agenda. Persons wishing to speak on the regular agenda item must sign up with the city clerk. You have 3 minutes per person. Anybody wishing to speak? Anybody on the Teams or telephone?
No, sir. No one indicated.
Okay, thank you. First item is Ordinance 2026-13, second reading, amending Unalaska Court of Ordinance, 3.40.040 pay rate range matrix to add the police service specialist position. May I have a motion and a second to adopt ordinance 2026-13?
Move to adopt ordinance 2026-13.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungo, second by Councilman Longo. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager for more information.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So Ordinance 13 amends Title 3 to add the police services specialist position for the police department. Council discussed this during a work session on June 23rd, and the ordinance was introduced and had first reading on July 14th, unanimously being moved forward to public hearing and second reading tonight. The ordinance is ready for adoption, and that is staff recommendation.
Okay, thank you, Marjorie. Council discussion at this time. Any discussion on the ordinance 2026-13? None. City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide Councilman Coleman?
Thank you. Yeah, like I stated earlier, I'd asked if there had been a position description written on this, and I looked back in the previous meetings and discussions, and I really couldn't find anything other than a few bullet points. And I did though see in something there was a comment about you know, the order of things, and that you get the needs met, and then you get basically get funding, and then you come back and you say, oh, okay, well, this is all the things they're going to do. So the rules are really seems a little backwards to me. That we would be looking to approve a for a position that isn't really described in much detail at all. And I think the other point I wanted to make is I just feel like you know, the city manager has full authority on organization and personnel, and currently we don't, you know, we're waiting to possibly get a full-time or permanent city manager here. I just think the timing is a little off on this one, and I would prefer to see that a discussion be had with a full-time city manager to assess the implications of this citywide, especially when you come to a new position. So wouldn't say I was opposed to the idea, just reluctant to support this based off the timing of it. And I would prefer that it would be at a time when we are fully staffed in the management department.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Any further discussion by council? Okay. Hearing no further discussion by the council, city clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Thank you. I'll restate the motion. The motion is, has the city of Unalaska adopted ordinance 2026-13? I'll ask for a roll call vote.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
No.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
A roll call vote of five yeses and one no. As a result of this vote, council has adopted ordinance 2026-13. Next item B, ordinance 2026-14. Second reading, creating a budget amendment number one to fiscal year 2027 operating and capital budget. I have a motion and second to adopt ordinance 2026-14.
I move to adopt ordinance 2026-14.
Second. Moved by Councilman Longo, second by Councilman Bell. I'll turn this over to the Acting City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mayor. This budget amendment will allow the city to purchase new servers and move funding from an unused police officer position to the police services specialist position that you just approved. This ordinance was introduced and had first reading on July 14th, unanimously being moved forward to public hearing and second reading tonight. Ordinance is ready for adoption, and that is the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Marjorie, for introduction. Are there any questions or comments by council? City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
No. Thank you. I'll restate the motion. The motion is to adopt Ordinance 2026-14 on the second reading. I'll request a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
A roll call vote is 6 yes, 0 nays. As a result of this vote, council has adopted Ordinance 2026-14. Item C, Ordinance 2026-15, second reading, creating a budget amendment number 2 to fiscal year 2027 budget. I have a motion and a second to adopt Ordinance 2026-15.
Move to adopt Ordinance 2026-15.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Hundle. Thank you. I'll turn this over to the Acting City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mayor. This ordinance creates budget amendment number 2 to the FY27 budget and provides funding for the new collective bargaining agreements with our firefighters union and with the Inland Boatmen Union representing our ports department employees. Council earlier approved both of the CBAs, but due to timing, the required increased funding was not included in the FY27 budget ordinance. Therefore, we need this amendment. Ordinance 15 was introduced and had first reading on July 14th. Unanimously being moved forward to second public reading and public hearing and second reading tonight. The ordinance is ready for adoption, and that's our recommendation.
Thank you, Marjorie. Next, are there any comments or discussion by council? City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
I'll restate the motion. The motion is to adopt Ordinance 2026-15, second reading, creating a budget amendment number 2 to the fiscal year 2027 budget. Have a roll call, please.
Yes, sir. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
With the vote of 6 yeses and 0 nays, with this result and with this vote, council has adopted Ordinance 2026-15. Next item is Resolution 2026-43, authorizing the city manager to enter into a sole source procurement agreement with Axon Enterprise Incorporated to provide TASER electronic control device and related supplies, maintenance, and training. I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2026-43.
I move to adopt Resolution 2026-43.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Chastain. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mayor. This item is before council due to provisions in our code of ordinances requiring council approval of contracts that require payments in future fiscal years. The agreement with Axon will provide tasers for our police force, which is an important tool for control of noncompliant subjects, and provides an important level of force in our police protocols. Axon is the only manufacturer of the taser, making it the sole source necessary. I'll also note that the police department has reduced the number of tasers from 25 down to 9, which better aligns with their needs and also saves the city money. So staff recommends approval.
Okay, thank you, Marjorie, for that introduction on this resolution 2026-43. We'll have council discussion at this time. Comments or questions? Councilman Tungle.
So they're the only manufacturer of laser. That's why we're sold.
Correct. Axon is the only manufacturer of tasers.
Oh. Okay.
Thank you.
That's kind of business to be in
it. Quite a business. Country wine, huh?
Start making papers.
And no further discussion, comments, or questions? Council, none? City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Okay, thank you. I'll restate the motion to adopt resolution 2026-43. Have a roll call vote, please.
Yes, sir. Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Louie?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Thank you. With this vote of 6 yeses and 0 nays, with this vote, the council has adopted resolution 2026-43. Next item, resolution 2026-44, authorizing the city manager to execute a long-term lease agreement with the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for vehicle access control gate within East Point Road right-of-way. I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 2026-44.
We'll move to adopt resolution 2026-44.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell, second by Councilman Coleman. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager for introductions.
This item is before council due to provisions in the code that require council approval for long-term leases of more than 5 years. The long-term lease of city property, which is it's set up for 30 years with a single 10-year extension, is with the Alaska Department of Transportation. The land will be used for a vehicle access control gate on East Point Road toward the approach to the airport. DOT wants to move the existing gate farther back from the the intersection of those two roads, East Point and I don't know if it's still called Airport Beach Road or if it's Ballyhoo by then where they come together. But they want to move it back to almost directly in front of the old powerhouse. As this is a change for safety concerns, staff recommends approval.
Okay, thank you. Marjorie, we'll ask the council for any discussion. Councilman Luby.
So they want to move it back that far because they believe it's safer than where it is now? Is there a reason? I mean, what is the how is it safer, I guess, would be, have they said?
Well, honestly, I don't know. So I'm going to ask Mark Kielmeyer if he'd come up to the podium. He's been dealing with these folks, and so hopefully he'll have an answer for you if they set out the safety reasons. Thank you, Mark.
All right, Lil. To answer your question, I have no idea. So the DOT approached us in June. They're replacing three of the traffic control gates. All those gates are on airport state property. The one that's, you know, on East Point Road currently, they've asked to relocate the new gate onto city property. So they approached us about getting a right-of-way permit. I never really asked the reason why. I guess, quite honestly, I was pretty happy to get a new gate. So I'm more than happy to ask the question and get back to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll support this resolution. Anything that'll help move this project along. Those gates have been, you know, a problem. And the DOT's had, you know, struggles trying to get them fixed and maintained. The movement for the gate is to get outside of the FAA setback requirements for the approach there. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Tungo.
Yeah, that would be great. But I got one quick question. Are we still going to put a stop sign before you make a turn or go straight on that? Because we got one on the other end of it before the...
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how that works. I know as you, there's a stop sign to turn left on the Ballyhoo,
yeah.
And there's a stop sign to turn right on the Ballyhoo. I think the stop sign is going to remain.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just for when the airplanes are taking off and landing, let those gates close.
Yeah. So we keep those stops.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments from council? Can they see? I guess I probably have to talk to the FAA, but experience on that corner by the power plant is you can't see, barely see the end of the runway, let alone the runway. So the problem we're having is, in my opinion, the trailers are going and they don't have no lights flashing or anything going. And of course, they don't look at the runway right away until they get around the corner where they make the turn to go back over to the other side. A little bit too late a couple of times. Didn't see the plane at all.
Right. Well, hopefully, by moving these gates back out of whatever Mr. Bell said, the warning area, hopefully, this, you know, kind of prevents them to be anywhere close to planes encroaching or approaching.
Okay, thanks. Councilman Luby.
So we had a little bit of a discussion about a possibility of extension of a runway, and that was towards Delta Western, if, you know, there was a discussion that it was a possibility. With that, would this impact anything like that? I mean, being a 30-year lease, that's, I guess, is the biggest issue.
Well, so the 30-year lease is in effect as long as that gate is in use. I assume if we're going to go through a project to expand the runway, all of these gates will be relocated at some point, and then we'll probably be doing the lease process over again, or maybe it'll be back on state land. I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments or questions? All right, thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Mark.
You. All righty.
Okay, we're on. City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
I'll restate the motion. Motion is to adopt resolution 2026-44. I'll request a roll call vote.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
With this vote, the council has adopted resolution 2026-44. Next item, resolution 2026-45, authorizing the city manager to enter into agreement with Otis Elevator Company for the City Hall and Community Center Elevator Repair Project. We have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 2026-45.
I'll make a motion to adopt a resolution 2026-45.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, seconded by Councilman Bell. Turn this over to the acting city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mayor. The elevators at the community center and city hall need to be refurbished. The motherboard at the community center elevator is failing and has required repair. And there have been instances of the elevator not being available to users. The city hall elevator is of the same age and requires similar work. The contract amount is within the approved budget of the CMMP project, and staff recommends using the original manufacturer and their parts, which is Otis. We recommend that for this work, and staff recommends approval.
Thank you, Marjorie. Councilman Coleman?
How much money did we set aside for this project?
Well, I know it's less than what this contract is. I could look at the CMMP real quick. I didn't have that at the top of my head. Mark, do you know that off the top of your head? Rather than sitting here in silence while I look for an ordinance or the resolution. One at City Hall, one at the Community Center.
So I know in the CMMP, the way we have it set up, there's two separate projects, City Hall elevator repairs and Community Center elevator repairs. I think both of those projects currently have $210,000 in them or somewhere in there. So this elevator modernization project with Otis, their proposal was like $198,700 for each. Also in FY27, we added, I believe, $80,000 to this project because there are some improvements by others, electricians, fire suppression that needs to be done in coordination with the Otis people doing the modernization improvements. So we should have plenty of funding. So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Councilman Tungo.
Do we have an annual inspection on those elevators?
I'll be honest with you, I'm not an elevator expert. I could go look at the certificate in the elevator. I don't know if it's yearly or every other year. I'm not sure.
I believe they do, Councilmember Tom.
I'm pretty sure they do. Mm-hmm. They can't be operated unless they've been inspected annually.
Yeah, just working in this building. They've just gotten old and need to be replaced. Not the entire structure, but like the motherboard and some parts and things. Like, I don't think the carriage is being replaced.
No, it's mostly with the controls. They're going to go through and do some, I'm not an elevator expert, but they're going to go through the whole elevator, the hoisting, the crane, the safety stops, make sure everything works correctly. They're going to do new motherboard and things like that. But, you know, the issue with this, and I don't know if it's an issue, but elevators are very proprietary by nature. You know, there's like four big elevator companies, and basically once you get in with an elevator, you're kind of stuck using their pieces and parts and people to do the work. So this is why we're kind of asking for the sole source with Otis.
I've worked with the elevators, the people that inspect when I used to work at NERT. Okay. And they do test load, you know, the weight and
yes.
everything else. So
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I did find the CMMP project. Its total for both elevators is $1,017,000 each.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions, Council? Okay, hearing none. City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll restate the motion. The motion is to adopt Resolution 2026-45. Have a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
With this vote, the Council has adopted Resolution 2026-45. Next item is G, Resolution 2026-46, authorizing the city manager to execute a two-year extension agreement with GCI Communication Corporation for dedicated internet service. I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2026-46.
Move to adopt Resolution 2026-46.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Tungo. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mayor. Like other resolutions tonight, this item's before council due to provisions in our code requiring council approval of contracts that require payment in future fiscal years. The agreement with GCI will extend our existing agreement for two more years, providing substantially increased bandwidth from 80 to 250 megabits per second, so a substantial increase at a lower price point, $12,500 in savings. And with that offer comes a two-year extension of the existing agreement. Staff recommends approval.
Okay, thank you, Marjorie, for an introduction. City Council, and discussion? Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. So I would like to know if GCI is fulfilling their contract currently, as in are they meeting all the conditions of their contract?
Good question. Our IT manager, Jake Whitaker, is available. He's attending remotely.
Oh, he came back down.
There he is. He was remotely for a little bit. I didn't see him come back in. So, Jake, if you wouldn't mind coming up to the podium, please. You need the question repeated? Okay, great. Thanks.
Jacob Whitaker, IT manager for the city. We've been pretty pleased. We have the backup Starlink that's come bundled with the service, and so we've So with the couple of cuts we had, we were able to fail over. Well, very pleased with that. So the service continues as is, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is where I'm going with this. It was when they had the fiber break, they were guaranteeing redundancy during the initial, when we first went through the RFP process. And so I was just wondering how they performed during those particular times, if they, you know, did meet up with the conditions of the contract and they did provide the backup and we were back up and running as agreed upon.
That's correct. You can actually see the Starlink dish on top of City Hall, and that's the dish that's specifically for backup, and yeah, worked out really well. Very pleased.
I will tell you from a user standpoint of the city's internet, it was seamless almost. A couple of times, you know, you could notice that it was a little bit slower with the LEO satellite versus the fiber. But from a user standpoint, it worked. The redundancy worked.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman. Councilman Ruby.
Yeah, so with the Starlink that's on top of the building, so GCI is providing that service to us, or is the city paying separately for that redundancy?
That's within the contract, GCI.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Any further comments or questions on Resolution 2645? Hearing none, I'll request the city clerk. Are there any signed up in the public for public comment?
No, sir. No one made an indication, and no written comments submitted.
Okay, thank you. I'll restate the motion to adopt Resolution 2026-46. I request a roll call vote.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Thank you. With this vote, the council has adopted resolution 2026-46. We're on item 13, community input and announcements. This is the final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. 3 minute time limit. Anyone in chambers?
Good to go. John Locking, I'm a local resident. Got about 50 years invested in the community here. Local taxpayer, property taxpayer, probably paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in business taxes. Strong community supporter. And we've been here tonight talking about a few things I just wanted to mention, you know, shifting taxes, different planning rules and ideas that we have to move forward in the future, hopefully progressively, and some public safety changes for enforcement. But one thing I've been an advocate for and visited with at least half of the city council members that are sitting and more is code enforcement. So relative to safe business practices, permitting, right-of-way use, public nuisances and threats to what exists right now, it just seems to fall on deaf ears. And I just want to say it again that I think it's worthy of addressing. I don't know why the city doesn't have a code enforcement officer, probably, in my opinion, better focused than some of the other. I want to go in a lot of depth out of respect for the investment and time and ideas of other people, but it just seems like we miss that part, and we keep putting rules forward or ideas without the idea of ensuring that they're complied to. And when we do that, it's just hollow. It's just not, it doesn't have substance. So, I would just hope that people that I've talked to will listen and think about things that I've said, and that it's just right and fair that the community police what they already have and the rules that they already have on the books before they implement a whole bunch more or decide to enforce things that aren't relative in the right now. So just my two cents. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Anyone else in chambers? Anyone on team, telephone, or Zoom?
No, sir. No one made an indication.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Our next item is item 14, which is executive session to discuss proposed city manager employment agreement and potential professional service agreement. In a motion, go into executive session.
I'll make a motion to go into executive session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Tungle. Is there any objections to going into executive session? Hearing none. We are in executive session. Give us a few moments, a couple of minutes to what? We're in executive session.
Looks like you're having a break, Mr. Mayor.
What's up?
Your council members are leaving the room, so it looks like you're having a break.
No quits right there. So. All right, well. We're in the executive session. Put all together. We went back into session at 8:43. We're in regular session at this time. All council members are present, and city manager and city clerk. This time, I'll entertain a motion to approve Resolution 2647, authorizing the mayor to sign the employment agreement between City of Unalaska and Bartenko to serve as city manager for the City of Unalaska. Do I have a motion? Second.
I make a motion to authorize the mayor to sign an employment agreement between the City of Unalaska and Bart J. Inkle to serve as city manager of the City of Unalaska.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle. Second by Councilman Longo. Discussion? Hearing no discussion, I call for a roll call vote.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
With this vote of 6 yes and 0 nays, resolution 2026-47 is now approved. I need a directive to authorize the acting city manager to...
Got it.
Go ahead.
Okay. I move to direct the acting city manager to negotiate a professional services agreement with Bart Hinkle.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Longo to authorize acting city manager to professional service agreement negotiate.
Yes.
Any discussion? Hearing none. Roll call on professional service agreement.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Chastain?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Roll call of 6-0 in favor of authorizing the acting city manager to put together a professional service agreement negotiation with Bart Hinkle. Having completed all items on the agenda, we are adjourned at 8:48. Good night in Alaska.
Sorry, I turned off.